Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Small business owner, you're a special force in the marketplace. I consider you to be a latter-day pioneer and truly one of my heroes.
Welcome back, heroes. Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you for being here. We're visiting with our good friend Gerald Celente. He is the director of Trends Research Institute, the author of the national best-selling book Trends 2000, which you've been hearing me talk about for a long time, several couple of years or so. And he's also our friend and a member of our Brain Trust. Gerald, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jim.
It's good to have you back. And also, folks, I mentioned earlier in the hour an outstanding, a very unique and one of the most interesting documents that I get in the year. Comes about four times a year, or approximately quarterly, the Trends Journal, and from the Trends Research Institute. And Gerald, again, I want to congratulate you. I've got my spring issue here, and I appreciate that.
Oh, a pleasure.
One of the things that you and I hear talked about a lot, we hear this a lot, I know you do, is the old economy versus the new economy. Talk to us about the new economy.
There is no new economy.
Well, if you say that, we won't have anything to talk about, Gerald.
It's the same old economy. There's nothing new about it. And all you have to do, Jim, is look back in the past. We had, you know, electricity, the automobile, on and on and on, and there was no new economy. There were recessions, depressions, panics. There were, you know, you name it. Life keeps going on. I think we have a bad connection here, Jim.
Okay, I'm hearing you okay.
Okay. So what's going on is that there's really nothing new out there. And that the...
Gerald, isn't nothing a little bit of a strong word?
Well, no. In the sense that the only thing new is that what's going on is that this is an evolution of existing technologies.
Yeah.
The internet is merely the evolution of telegraph, telephone, radio, and television. In and of itself, it's nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
Steam engine was new. Electricity was new.
I see your point.
The automobile was new. So that's the point that we're making.
I see what you're saying. But the reason I say nothing seems to be too strong a word, the way we look at these developments, the newest generation of the evolution of these products, of these inventions and these capabilities and applications that you're talking about, these new generations, the way we look at that and the way they're behaving in the marketplace, the way we are capitalizing those activities. Isn't that new?
I agree. I mean, there's no question that, you know, the internet and the computer technology is changing life dramatically.
Yeah.
But it's not revolutionary. There is no new economy. There will be recessions, depressions, panics, wars. It just keeps going on. And the hoax is that they're trying to tell us that, no, now there's a new model because of high technology. There is no new model.
Well, now let me ask you this. Let me throw this question out for you. Isn't productivity creating a new element in the marketplace?
To an extent, but there are other things going on too. This is one of our previous Trends journals, the 5-0 formula.
All right.
So that means that there's overcapacity, overproduction, overpopulation, open markets, and of course now online. When you put all these together, you can still have high productivity, but you also continue to have low wages and low inflation.
Does it? I'm sorry, go ahead.
So what's going on is that, yeah, you're having some more productivity, but that doesn't mean that people's lives are changing dramatically in terms of income levels or in terms of distribution of wealth.
Right.
So
what about the advent of globalization? How does that fit into what you're saying is not really a new economy?
Well, that, you know, we've always had globalization, but it changes, and you have... You know, you go back to the 1930s and the turn of the century. It was massive globalization.
But you didn't have the connectivity that you've got now.
You didn't have the connectivity at the level that we have now. But think about it. Go back to the 1700s. You know, there was no transatlantic cables. And so think of what happened in the minds of the people in the days when transatlantic cables came about. Mm-hmm. Go to the turn of the century with Marconi transmitting across the English Channel. And, you know, that first breakthrough. And then, of course, the scientists of the day saying, well, yeah, there's waves will go across, the radio waves will go across a body of water, but they'll never be able to make it over the tops of mountains. So I point that out because of the dramatic changes in society. Think of this. From Julius Caesar to Grover Cleveland, the world leaders were taken to their inauguration and coronations by horse-drawn buggies.
Yeah, I've heard you say that before. I like that. Yeah, you're right.
But so to get caught up in this, look, you woke up this morning, you did what you do every morning, you put on one shoe at a time, you had breakfast, whatever else you did, you drove to work. You didn't get on the internet, most likely.
Well, actually, I did.
But most.
But I see your point.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's all the fundamentals, the basics of life, the heart. 21st century man does not live by software alone.
Yeah.
Clothing, shelter, food, transportation. The old economy products will dominate the 21st century. The internet computerization of society will merely augment what's already been there.
Old economy products. All right, tell us what. Identify some of those old economy products.
Well,
other than food and clothing, obviously.
Food, shelter, clothing, transportation. You know, just think of all of the trillions of dollars in healthcare products and healthcare services.
But all right, let's talk about those issues then. Let's talk about how those things will change. For example, do you believe that very soon tens of millions more people will be working from home than are working from home now?
Yes, I do.
Okay, stand by. Hold on to that thought, because we're going to come back to that when we come back after these messages. Ladies and gentlemen, stand by. It's 20 after. We're visiting, having a great conversation with our good friend Gerald Celente. He is the director of Trends Research Institute and the author of Trends 2000. Stay with us. Our website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com, and be sure to go there and sign up for my newsletter. It's free. It comes out on Sunday, every Sunday. Brand new newsletter every week. And if you think that won't add a few hours to your work week, Gerald, I know you know that. Try turning one of those things out once a week. But I enjoy doing it, and I'm getting a lot of good comments, and we've got lots of new subscribers. Check it out. And if you decide, if it's free, but if you decide you don't like it, then it's easier to unsubscribe than it is to subscribe. And it comes by email every Sunday. Gerald Celente is our guest. He's the author of an outstanding newsletter himself that's a print newsletter. It's called the Trends Journal, and it comes out quarterly. I've got my spring copy in front of me. He's also the author of Trends 2000, which is a book that I recommend to you. Gerald, tell us where the book's available.
Oh, the book Trends 2000 is available in bookstores everywhere, and, of course, the online bookstores.
Absolutely. And when you go to my website and you search for Gerald in my search engine, or if you go to one of the online bookstores and search for Gerald's book, then the last name is spelled Celente, and it's pronounced Celente. Gerald, when we took the break, I was being the devil's advocate a little bit in your hypothesis or your theory that there is no real new economy for the new millennium. And my point is, if you believe, as I do, that there are going to be millions more people working from home, either their home office or their home-based businesses over the next 5, 10, 20, 50 years, but then you say that nothing's really going to change with regard to the fundamentals, the basic old economy items that we have. Isn't that going to change transportation quite a bit?
To some extent, you know what I've learned in my 20 years of doing this work is that there's never a black and white or an either or. Transportation, yes, will change because more and more people will be working at home. But then you have to throw another layer on top of it. So too will population increases happen. So it's not everyone that's going to be home-based, you know, a larger percentage. But, you know, look at the population growth. You know, you say the word population numbers, you know, people's eyes glaze over.
Mm-hmm.
But start from the time zero, whenever you believe zero might have been, and go to roughly the 1920s. There were 2 billion people on the planet. Now, go from the 1920s to today, 2000, there are 6 billion people.
Yeah.
Now, look at the United States. At the turn of the century, there were 78 million people in this country.
Now we're almost 3.
Exactly.
Almost 300.
276.
Yeah.
So the point being, Jim, yes, a lot less people will be commuting, but there'll be a lot more people overall.
But the new economy, and I'm gonna say, my position is that there is kind of a new economy, but the reason I say that is maybe my definition is not as strict as yours is.
Well, I'm going by the definition that's becoming the popular definition now, that in the new economy, the old rules don't count. And
okay.
That the economy will continue to boom along and motor forward because of the increases in technology and the demand for those technological products. And I just don't buy that.
Yeah. All right. Well, now, okay, as far as new products replacing old products, I agree with you on that. But let's talk about one area that is really exciting to me, and my audience, the ones who've been listening to me for a while, know that I like this topic a lot, because I've covered it fairly often, and I bring it up whenever possible because I think it's a very important development, and that's broadband with connectivity, the big pipes. Now look at all the different things that when you're able to connect, Gerald, to when you and I are able to connect, or you're able to connect to someone in Russia or wherever, and to the kind of degree that you can connect with broad bandwidth, when that's the default connection, don't you think that's going to change things dramatically?
It will change things as dramatically as just think of the day when people stop burning whale oil and candles and gas lamps.
But didn't that create a new economy?
No.
It didn't.
No, it didn't. It created a bigger economy,
yeah.
But it didn't create a new economy.
Okay.
In the sense that you still had recessions, depressions, panics, wars, trade wars. You're going to see trade wars again.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing really new. All it did was to create a new level of doing business. But the fundamentals remain the same, supply and demand. And the basic products of life still dominate any society.
The Fed is really scratching its head over what to do with all the new stuff that's going on. And what you're telling them is focus on the old stuff.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, when we come back, folks, with Gerald, we're going to talk about cyber vandals. We're going to find out what he has to say about cyber vandals. We've got a lot more things to talk about, too. Some good stuff coming at you straight away. 29 after, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, 888-822-8255. If you'd like to give us a call, make a comment, ask a question, weigh in on the discussion, you can agree or disagree. We might even like it better if you disagree with me and our special guest, Gerald Celente. Here's the number, 888-822-8255. Gerald, you have a website, and I'd like for you to give it to my audience, please.
Yes, it's Trends, that's plural, trendsresearch.com.
Trendsresearch.com. If you're on my site and you go to one of my search engine options, just type in CELENTE and hit all areas, hit the search button. You'll find the information about Gerald, including links to his website, links to his email, and a couple of archives, and maybe even a couple of articles later on. We'll see how that works. But he is well represented in our site because he is one of the original members of our Brain Trust. And don't forget to check out his book, Trends 2000, at your local bookstore or online bookstores. Gerald, I want to get into cyber vandals in a minute, but before we do, I think you had a couple more things you wanted to say. I brought up the Fed toward the end there as we were talking about the economy, and that's a topic that my audience knows is fascinating to me too. There has never been a time in the 86 years that the Fed has been in existence, there has never been a more complicated time for the Fed in what they do.
No, there hasn't been, but they created the problem.
Why?
But, well, I'll go back to 1998. If you go back to the fall of 98,
yep.
You might remember that the stock market looked like it was in free fall.
It went down to, what, below, down into the 7 range?
And what happened was Russia defaulted on their loans.
First Thailand, then Indonesia, then Russia.
Exactly. Then Brazil was in trouble,
yep.
And the market looked like it was going to crash. So what did the Federal Reserve do? In the face of a strong, growing economy, they lowered interest rates three times to satisfy the Wall Street speculators.
Three times in just a couple of months.
That's right.
But there was something else that happened. The long-range, what was it? What was that long-term management? What was the name of that big?
Oh, you're right. Long-term capital management.
Long-term capital management. You know that deal tubed with the Russia thing. But I take your point, and I in a way I guess I can't disagree with you. But what you got to realize, I think, Gerald. I mean, I'm no economist, but I tracked those events. I was here reporting about those things when those things were happening right here on the show, and including all the defaults and all the devaluations and all the reduction in interest. What was happening was the rest of the world seemed to be going to hell in a handbasket, and America was the atlas that was holding up the world's economy. We had to keep producing, and what else we had to do? We had to keep consuming.
What happened, Jim, is that capitalism was doing precisely what it was supposed to do.
That's right, and for a short period of time, especially for a dramatic 6 to 12 months, I think the United States was literally the economic atlas of this globe.
But by lowering interest rates, they call it putting liquidity into the market.
Yep.
It's cheap money, and what they've done now is they've created a bigger problem.
But what if they hadn't done that?
We would have gone into a slowdown.
But what if it had gotten worse?
You cannot have continual growth. And this is one of the things we write about in the No New Economy for the New Millennium. You cannot have it. You have to have cycles, just like you have cycles of life. You don't wake up every day and think that you're going to make a lot of money. You're not going to.
But with all the immediate connectivity and the globalization today, I mean, money can circle the globe at a lot of speeds right now. With all that going on, I think the Fed has never faced anything like they were facing. I guess what they did was they erred on the side of conservative.
They erred on the side of speculators.
Okay.
And I grew up, and you grew up at a time when we were taught in school that the Federal Reserve used monetary policy to regulate the strength of the economy, either to slow it down or to speed it up.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do that this time. They used monetary policy to bail out Wall Street. End of story.
Yep.
Just like they used their power and their whip to bail out long-term capital management.
Now that did happen. I agree with you.
And this is another example of corporate
that
welfare.
That was unprecedented, wasn't it?
It's corporate welfare. You go bust in, you're not going to call up the Fed. You won't get through to the operator if you need money. No, this is a hoax. And the hoax is this, that the Federal Reserve acted irresponsible, and in doing so, by lowering interest rates, the markets were reacting to overspeculation. Now they've created a larger speculative bubble.
What seems to have happened is it almost seems like the stock market, which is something, the two things I think that the Fed is concerned about in this country, one is the stock market and the other is the wealth effect and what that's doing to debt, to individual debt. Those are two things that the Fed is worried about very much. But it almost seems like that the markets, the stock markets, have become immune to and just basically disregard the activity of the Fed.
And that's another one, by the way. It appears like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Fed raises interest rates two more times, you're going to see the stock market respond in kind.
Well, you may be right. What I'm more worried about is what I've been calling now for a couple of 3 months is the unintended consequences, which is small business.
Oh, yeah, small businesses always get hurt.
We're going to be the first ones to be hurt badly by what you're talking about.
That's right.
And it's unintended consequences.
That's right.
Stay with us, Gerald. We're going to be right back. Gerald, let's leave some of the other things we were talking about. I want you to tell us quickly about what you think about the cyber vandals, what you call cyber vandals and privacy. And you got to admit that this is kind of adding a new angle to the marketplace, isn't it? All the new capability for invading our privacy.
Oh yeah, you know, we don't have any privacy. It's we're losing it more and more. You know what happened this past February when they attacked Amazon and Yahoo and eBay and E-Trade and shut down those sites? You know, this is just the beginning, and we're only hearing bits and pieces of a major story here. Here's the thing, Jim. There is no stopping cyber vandals from attacking the Internet. And it's more than just a group of, you know, kind of computer geeks trying to test their skills. It's much greater than that. What it's really about is you have, this is prime land or a prime land grab for criminals that could go online and steal your credit worthiness or even your identity. It's cyber vandals in other countries that are tapping into financial institutions and stealing money from them.
Within the week, last Friday, we talked about with Jonathan Zuck, who was the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies. We talked about some of the things that have been happening that as a result of people doing what they were doing, vandalizing and hacking into American information from Europe.
Right. And think of it coming out of Russia and you know, any country in the world.
Right.
And they're not just, you know, I'll make my point. Just as the government, although they're spending about $15 billion a year federally to try to stop the flow of drugs and have been totally unsuccessful, they'll be just as unsuccessful in trying to stop the worldwide trade of cyber vandals breaking into sites. The very nature of the Internet makes it porous.
But don't you think that technology, that there will be technological developments, that maybe they'll be behind a day or two or a week, but don't you think that there also are people out there, just as there are policemen out there fighting criminals, that there'll be police technology, so to speak, out there fighting this criminal capability?
Exactly. But crime keeps going on.
Yeah.
And for every new technology put in as a firewall, they'll breach the firewall with another technology. It's the nature of the beast.
But to use your scenario, your analogy that you've used the whole hour and that you've been using now for some time, then really there is really nothing new under the sun.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's just crime, but a different kind of crime.
Yeah.
And the hoax is that they have these, you know, big meetings and the FBI comes in. Well, here's something else, by the way. Just as the FBI was trying to find these cyber criminals, they crashed their site.
Mm-hmm.
And this made a tiny little story in the New York Times on February 26th, below the fold in the back pages of the business section. So the government, you know, they come, we're going to stop this, you know, and forget it. They're not going to stop anything.
All right, let's move on and talk about one of the things that I know you focus on is the war, what you call the war between the classes.
Well, it's true, and you know, and I want to make it clear, I'm a political atheist, but we're pointing out, you know, the realities of what's going on. And this whole economic boom that we saw, you have to understand that 40% of the households have seen their net assets decline 36% between 1983 and 1997.
See, I'm having a hard time understanding that when at the same time we've got this investor class where over 40% of Americans are invested in the stock market.
And that's what they say, but you have to understand too, when you're looking at averages like that, they're very skewed.
Yeah.
So you'll have people invested through pensions and benefit programs.
I mean, 20 years ago, the single largest asset of any American was their home. Maybe even 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. But today, it's their stock portfolio, isn't it?
Oh, no. I would still say it's the home.
You still think it's the home, huh?
Yeah. But, and again, you know, just because you have those numbers, that doesn't mean they're equally distributed. So, you know, you may have somebody with a few stocks or a pension program. But look at these are the realities. I mean, these are hard numbers, Jim. You had the income for the poorest fifth of the American public dropped 5% over the last 20 years, while the incomes of the richest fifth rose 33%.
And so you predict a war between the classes.
It's going to happen.
Stand by. We're going to talk about that a little bit more. And I'm going to see if I can coax Gerald into talking politics when we come back after these messages. Stay with us. Thank you very much for joining us. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to go there. Whatever you do, sign up for my newsletter. It is free. I think you'll like it. And when you get there, look for Gerald Celente, C-E-L-E-N-T-E. You can put his name into my search engine. Find his website. Go there. Sign up for his newsletter. You'll send it to him, won't you, Gerald?
If they buy the book Trends 2000, we'll send them the newsletter.
All right, there you go. I like that. And the book is Trends 2000. It's available in your bookstores. Gerald, you were wrapping up a point about the war between the classes, and then you're going to move into talking a little bit more about the economy.
Yes, and when I mentioned the war between the classes, Jim, any time the gap between the rich and the poor widens to the levels that it is now, you have what's as old as time, class warfare.
What's that going to look like?
Well, it's going to look like there's going to be more racial divisiveness because the income is also, you know, unequally distributed at that level as well. So, you know, any time this happens in society, this is what the result is. You know?
But don't you think the breaking down of the welfare rolls in America is going to ameliorate that a little bit?
No, because, here's the other thing. You know, people are working now two jobs. It's common.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not seeing themselves get much further in life. You know, I remember, I got married in 1971. My wife, I didn't have a job. She was making $10,000 a year.
That was a good job.
It was a good job. And we were living well. Today, you're making $30,000 a year, and you can't keep your head above water.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, and that's another point, by the way. Take a look at the economy now. Look at the growth that we're experiencing. Snapshot of the times. Because this is as good as it gets. It doesn't get better than this.
We will look back and say those were the good old days, and it will be right.
Those were the good old days.
Yeah. So what do you think is going to be? Where do you think we're going to be 5 years from now?
Well, we're going to be definitely lower in terms of a stock market explosion. It's going to go back to the old days when you used to invest in companies that paid, decent dividends, and you had a future of your investment portfolio.
So you think what's going on right now is pretty much an aberration?
Exactly. This is as good as it gets.
So you think it'll start turning when the interest rates go back up?
Yes.
Sure
when you talk to your guest later on, from the Fed,
they'll
tell you the same thing. But they don't. You see, the problem is, and you pointed it out, the unintentional effect, is that when they raise them too high, they're going to be hurting the little person first.
That's exactly. It's already happening.
Yep.
Do you know that right now with the new rates that small business owners are already paying over 10%?
And how can they? They can't do that.
They can do okay at 8%, maybe even 8.5 to 9. But once you go over 10%, that's a killer for small business.
That's right.
And see what I've been saying all along is the Fed focuses on the stock market, and they're not focusing on the engine that's really creating the wealth and the strength of this economy, and that's small business.
Well, they don't care about small business because, look, one of the trends I talk about in politics is that we don't have a democracy anymore. And here's the definition of what we have. It's called a plutocracy.
Yeah.
And a plutocracy means the wealthy run the nation. And all you have to do is look at the so-called primaries that they had, where they spent $250 million for that to show that class of politician to that kind of money.
We just got 10 seconds, Gerald. I apologize for interrupting you, but I want to get it on the record that you say that Vice President Gore will win the election in November.
It's the economy, stupid, they used to say, and people aren't going to jeopardize that.
You and I will be talking about this during the year, and so I just want to get that on record because that's a benchmark for you. Thanks, Gerald. We got to go. Thank you very much.
Now.
You were great today, as always.
Thank you for having me.
We'll see you next quarter. Gerald Celente, folks, author of Trends 2000. Check his book out. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.